The theater. The theater.
Bring out Louis.
Theater. Theater.
To be or not to be.
Theater. Theater.
Hey, 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 hey,
hey,
hello.
Yo, hey, yo.
How y'all doing?
Good.
I'm great.
Yeah. Good. Tired. Yeah. Tired. Yeah. Don't ever produce four shows at one time for the theater.
Yeah.
That lesson learned. Well,
it's a good call. It's a good call.
Good Friday.
Happy Good Friday.
Yeah.
So
all right. This, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah.
Have y'all seen any theater recently? Any good theater?
No.
That's the better question. Have you seen any good theater?
No. No, I won't. I saw a production of a new musical that was not good, and saw a production of a famous musical that was not good. So I'll keep those. I don't want to disparage anybody. There was some talent in there and some good efforts in there, but then there was just like,
it's tough out here in these streets.
It is.
Honestly, the last thing I saw, which I thoroughly enjoyed, was Shakespeare Youth Fest that weekend.
We had a blast.
Bit of live theater. No, I think last time we recorded, we hadn't gone yet.
Yeah. Oh, right on. Great work, Bailey.
It was really fun.
Hats off to you. Those kids were wonderful. Everybody that I told about it all kind of like rolled their eyes. Like, how could you possibly have seen two Shakespeare Youth shows in a day? And I'm like, it was fucking good. That's why.
Except I don't trust children that are more talented than me.
And there were a few. But here's another kid. but I will say to speak to that is, you know, you did see the opening of The Tempest, which was all brand new kids who had never acted before in their lives.
Oh.
Right? All brand new kids, which was really, really fun. And then you saw Richard II, which was all kids who have been doing it for like over a decade with us. Right? Or like some of them have, right? So it's like you got to see kind of the polar opposites of what we do. Richard II had an absolutely incredible closing weekend, especially their closing show. They had this very active audience that was laughing and jeering and cheering and just having a blast. It was like Groundlings, and it was fantastic. You had a bit of a quieter audience, but they were like engaged. We could tell they were with us.
I was with it the whole time.
It was really, really fun. So I appreciate
good
y'all
cutting
supporting.
Of that show too.
We cut
good
the
cutting
crap
of that
out of it,
yeah,
we made it solid.
You know, you hit all the bullet points really well.
We just really focused on the Richard and Emeril relationship, and we really focused on Bolingbroke as sort of like a lone entity, like cutting a lot of his big dialogue scenes and letting him just like be on stage a little
bit.
It was
giving Feruza Balk.
Feruza Balk.
Oh my god, it was so awesome.
Legend. Yeah, we have an incredible cast of kids, and I'm very proud of them all. And they're going to do Titus Andronicus this summer in a Rin Week run, which is where we give them their scripts and a few weeks before, and then they have to show up memorized. And then they do the show in a week, and they rehearse it together all day for 4 days, and then perform it on the fifth day, and they direct it themselves.
Yeah.
So we're supposed to like kind of keep
what
our hands off.
What a show to do that with, too.
Yeah, it's going to be crazy, but I'm excited.
There's something really beautiful about seeing people perform stuff that they really, really, really give a shit about and have worked hard on.
Sure.
And I mean, I guess you probably tend to see that with kids a lot more, but
that's true.
I mean, it's just a beautiful thing. Like,
it's tougher, especially because we're in LA, where a lot of people do theater as a sort of like exercise between my film work. So there's this added side of like, we do see a lot of passionless work, I think, out here. And maybe that's what we're actually responding to sometimes. It's not always that it's like bad work. Sometimes it's passionless, and sometimes when it's really passionate, it is bad. And you're like, oh no.
That's theater.
That's theater, though. Yeah, you gotta sort through it all to find the gold, you know?
It can definitely be film, too, though.
Sure, you're right.
You're just sitting in the same room as them in theater, so.
That's right.
Definitely different energy exchange.
That's a really solid pivot point, so I'm going to use it, CJ.
Do it.
Welcome to Theater, the theater podcast for theater nerds made by three theater makers from the LA theater scene. I'm J. Bailey Burcham.
I'm CJ Merriman.
And I'm Scott Leggett.
He is. And this season, each week we're getting together to discuss and debate the intersection of theater and film. Film. We're very excited about film, that. So thank you, CJ, for pivoting us there. I want to introduce the episode. I was going to start with what we started with last week, but I think we took a little too much time to get into the episode last week, so I'm going to save it for the end.
Okay.
We're going to talk about, we had a write-in from a listener who was actually responding to something I posted on Instagram, but it had to do with theater, so I wanted to bring it up here. So I'll do that later. Patrick, yeah. J., thank you for writing it. We'll talk to you later. Okay. Welcome to Theater. This week, much like last week, this is the sister episode to last week.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So last week we covered two of the sirs, two of our knights that are actors, right? We covered Patty Stu and Ian Mack.
And Ian Mack.
This week, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, for those who don't know. This week we decided we were going to cover a couple of our favorite dames, and we couldn't really decide, and we chose three.
Yeah.
So this week, there's nothing like a dame. We are covering three of our favorite dames. We're covering Maggie Smith, Helen Mirren, and Judi Dench.
Yeah.
AKA our mothers.
Yeah.
Which one's your, if each one of them had birthed one of us, who would be whose mom?
My mom would have been Maggie Smith.
I think you're right.
I was going to say Judi Dench for me.
I think you're right. I think Helen's my mom.
Yeah.
I think you're right. I was about to say that. That's fantastic. So we're going to talk about their careers. We're going to talk about their intersections. We're going to talk about just like their lives and their careers. And we're going to talk about our favorite and least favorite performances of each of them. I've already made the artwork for this week. It does say there is nothing like a dame, and I'm very proud of it. And it's a bunch of pictures of them all playing queens.
I've even got my own internal ranking to do in this episode.
We're going to do it.
Yeah.
Wait, real quick, Ian McKellen or Patty Stu? Ranking.
If I had to cast one of them in a show?
It depends on the material.
I mean, honestly, I immediately went to Ian McKellen, but I've just interacted with more of his stuff.
I think Ian McKellen actually holds more gravitas, but I think Patty Stu is funnier.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I'd even go that Patty Stu's a little bit more of a true blue artist type with some of the lower budget stuff he does. Like,
whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah, I said it.
You're right. Okay, but before we hand it off to Scott for Scottopedia, there's a tiny segment I wanted to do that I think we kind of missed out on last week. So I want to make sure that we do it this week.
Let's do it.
I want to step through real quick. I'll do it quickly, but we can talk about the people if you have anything to say about them. I want to step through all of the sirs and dames that are actors.
Okay.
Oh,
that are,
okay.
That are still alive?
Maybe. Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I haven't looked at the list.
A long list. Yeah.
I think there's only like 18 on this list. Okay. So it's not crazy. Okay. First things first. Some of these are musicians too, and that's fine. Ringo Starr.
Yeah.
Is a sir, knighted by Prince William for his contributions to music.
Word.
Angelina Jolie is a dame.
I think I knew that.
How is that possible?
Not for acting,
but for all of her.
For her philanthropic efforts with organizations such as the United Nations.
Yeah.
Don't you have to be a British citizen?
No. American citizenship prevents them from using the title, but she is a dame when she is there.
Huh. Okay. All right. Fair enough. Right.
Jolie and the rest of her...
She's a geographical dame.
Yeah. Jolie and the rest of her fellow American honorees only received honorary recognition. Their American citizenship prevents them from using the title.
Copy.
Okay.
So she can't call herself Dame Angelina Jolie.
Right.
Gotcha.
But she is a dame. She has
been
damed.
Anyway.
Yeah, I would anyway. Joan Collins.
Yeah, okay. that tracks.
Who received her honor in 2015.
Yeah. That was
just really recent.
Yeah, I think we think of her dynasty, and we as Americans think about her in her later years and
she's
all of her.
She's kind of the only big, like, TV only star to be a dame, which is kind of interesting. She also, what I always think of her in is something we've talked about on this podcast, which is she's in the Donny Osmond Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat as Potiphar's wife.
I remember
all
that.
Right, yeah, all right,
she's
all right.
Hot. She's hot. Helen Mirren, of course. Mm-hmm. Mama Mir. Mama Mirren. Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
I've met him.
Michael Caine.
Okay, Caine. Of course.
Knighted 15 years ago. Elton John, Sir Elton, of course. Yeah. Kenneth Branagh, we knew.
Okay.
Oh,
okay.
I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, actually.
That must have been...
Seems a little young, to be honest.
Yeah, 2012. Yeah. 2012 he was knighted. That is, I believe, only a few years after his turn as Gilderoy Lockhart.
That's right.
I didn't think of anything around that time. Okay, Mick Jagger. He beat a knight.
Sure.
Judy Dench, CJ's mom. Liz Taylor.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
Yeah.
Creator of White Diamonds.
Mm-hmm. White Diamonds.
Correct, yes. and she became a dame on New Year's Eve, 1999. Best year of film.
Yeah.
Julie Andrews.
Of course.
In 2000, she got it.
My favorite.
Benny Kingsley.
Of course.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. As a matter, and he makes people call him Sir Ben.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, of course.
Yeah, there's a whole story where he's like, I've earned that. That is a rare title, and you will call me that, which I love. Totally
it's
respect.
Just like, this summer I'm turning 40, and I'm giving all of my friends permission to call me an old battle axe.
Okay. I like it. You old battle axe.
Yeah.
I love it. Maggie Smith received it in 1990, which is
pretty
early. Another old battle axe.
That's right. One of my favorite actresses of all time, may she rest in extreme peace, Angela Lansbury.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, but she was 88 when she became a dame. So she that was in 2014.
Wow.
She only passed a couple of years ago. So.
Yeah. Well, she had left England early too. Right. She'd come to Hollywood.
That's true.
Like in the 40s. So
you're right.
You know, distracted. Right. Yeah.
Another American up in here, we have in 2005, Bill Gates was knighted by the Queen. Quite interesting. Yeah. For his charity work, actually.
Okay,
same
the Bill
with
and
our
Melinda
dear
Gates
friend.
Foundation.
Oh, right, sure. Our dear friend Bono also is a knight.
Of course.
Boo!
Let me read this to you, though, because he's Irish, so it's a little different, okay?
Yeah.
He was knighted in a Dublin set ceremony in 2007, but don't mistake him for a sir. This is People magazine, by the way.
Sure, okay.
His Irish heritage means the title is nothing more than honorary, much like Americans, but he was recognized for his work in Africa.
Okay. Sure.
So you're like, sure, Bono, great. Now, here are the two that I'm a little bit like, really? Really?
Okay, hit us.
Russell Brand.
A good one.
Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
For his war on drugs.
No.
What year was that? Damn. That had to have been back in the day. That had to have been
the 80s.
That had to have been the Thatcher push. Wow. So
I mean,
he was knighted for an utter and total failure.
And then there's only been three American presidents ever knighted. Okay. So you have Ronald Reagan. yeah. for his war on drugs. You have George H.W. Bush.
Ugh.
Oh my God.
For his Damn. Quote, work in the Middle East. What?
What?
And you have Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Oh my God.
I like Ike. But that was for his World War II military leadership. So you're just sort of like, so all the war criminals.
Misses.
It's fine.
The Eisenhower one, I'm kind of okay with. Like, he legitimately, like.
You like Ike?
I kind of liked Ike. I mean, I respected Ike. You know, he was a pragmatist and, you know, and a good person. And honestly, probably. Not single-handedly, but he,
you don't like his politics, but you like him as a person. I get it.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. Or the other way around. Yeah. Okay, so why don't we get into these dames here?
Right.
It's funny because dame to me, it has a pejorative American sense, or it's like she's a dame. She's
yeah,
a hot
yeah,
dame.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
You know,
it's like Fanny. Or
yeah,
hint.
Yeah, right, right. There is nothing like a dame. Nothing in the world. You know, like, so that's, it's always kind of like a weird, like, sexualized term, like chick, even,
yeah,
like, or
absolutely.
Like something like that.
Yeah.
And so I just think it's so interesting that it's like the highest honor. It's like above a lady, right? It's just,
hell yes.
Yeah.
Scott.
Yeah.
Why don't you do the dang?
Okay.
Scottpedia.
The dames.
Scottpedia.
Yay.
The dames. All right. So I'm going to start real quick and ask you.
Yeah. Whose mom are you starting with?
Well, I'm going to ask you both to list these three dames from oldest to youngest.
Ooh. I bet I can do it.
I think I know.
Okay.
Oldest to youngest.
Uh huh.
Maggie Smith.
Uh-huh.
Judy Dench, Helen Mirren.
Okay.
I think Judy's older than Maggie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's, but Helen's the youngest, right?
Okay.
Are
okay.
we way off base?
No. It is Judy.
Is the oldest. Okay.
Is the oldest by
just like by a year or something, right?
No, by like less than 3 weeks.
Okay.
And then Maggie Smith, and then there's a significant jump. There's almost
Helen Mirren's like my parents' age, I think.
Yeah,
like
she's like
or something.
Yeah.
Do think, and I think part of this is cigarettes, because every time you watch an old video of Maggie Smith, who was beautiful, they were all beautiful, obviously, and still are. But when she, you know, those eyes and just like, she just looked incredible. Maggie Smith is always smoking a cigarette when she's being interviewed.
Yeah, especially.
Oh, yeah.
She has not aged quite as well as Judy Dench. Now, I don't know if Judy smoked or not, but Judy just has that. She still has that very, you know, soft skin sort of look. And Maggie Smith looks a bit more worn, a bit more McGonagall, and that's okay.
Yes.
And then she's in Hook, where they make her look way older.
She's 55 or something in that movie.
Yeah, but they make her look like she's like 900.
Yeah,
you're like, what are you doing?
She
it
was
works,
very
but it's
old
a lot.
In that movie.
You're right. Okay, anyway. So that's the age order.
Yeah. I'm actually starting with Maggie Smith because I got it wrong when I put my notes together. I'm gonna do it this way. So yeah, I was like, I was thinking.
We forgive you.
My notes in that order.
Yeah. So Margaret Natalie Smith was born on 28 December 1934 in Ilford, Essex. Mm. Her mother Margaret Hutton was a Scottish secretary from Glasgow. And her father, Nathaniel Smith, was a public health pathologist from Newcastle upon Tyne who worked at the University of Oxford. During childhood, her parents told Smith the romantic story of how they had met on a train from Glasgow to London via Newcastle. She moved with her family to Oxford when she was 4 years old. She had older twin brothers, Alistair and Ian, the latter of which went to architecture school. Smith was educated at Oxford High School until age 16 when she left to study acting at the Oxford Playhouse.
Oh, yeah, Oxford High.
Yeah, Oxford High, yeah.
Yeah.
Known for her wit in comedic roles, she has had an extensive career on stage and screen for over 7 decades and is one of Britain's most recognizable and prolific actresses. She has received numerous accolades, including, get this, 2 Academy Awards, 5 BAFTA Awards, 4 Emmy Awards, 3 Golden Globe Awards, and a Tony Award, making her one of the few performers to earn the quote-unquote triple crown of acting.
And, what did she win the Tony for?
I forget. It was something in the 70s.
Oh, okay, okay.
Was it her Hedda?
No, it wasn't for her Hedda. I'm almost positive
just
it was.
Just curious.
It wasn't anything that popped out to me when I looked at it. In 1952, at age 17, under the auspices of the Oxford University Dramatic Society, Smith began her career as Viola.
Lettuce and Lovage.
Ah, that's it. Lettuce and Lovage.
Lettuce and Lovage. Yeah, Lettuce and Lovage. She played Lettuce Dufay. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, she started her career as Viola in Twelfth Night at the Oxford Playhouse. She continued to act in productions at the Oxford Playhouse after seeing Smith in a production of The Double Dealer, which I'm not familiar with, at the Old Vic. She caught the eye of Laurence Olivier, who invited her to become part of his new national theater company soon after it was formed at the Old Vic in 1962. She soon became a fixture at the Royal National Theatre. British theatre critic Michael Coveney wrote that during her 8 years in the company, Smith developed a fierce rivalry with Olivier, writing, "He knew immediately he'd met his match, that she was extraordinary. He said that anyone who can play comedy that well can also play tragedy, and he offered the role, offered her roles such as Desdemona in Othello. But having got her into the company, they became not enemies, but professional rivals. Never before had anyone on stage been quicker than him, and now it seemed there was a contest." I just think it's so badass that Maggie Smith put Olivia in his place.
Hell yeah.
Smith married actor Robert Stevens on 29 June 1967. They had 2 sons, actors Chris Larkin and Toby Stevens, and were divorced on 6 April 1975. Smith married playwright Alan Beverly Cross on 23 June 1975 at the Guildford Register office, and they have remained married until his death in 1998. Smith has 5 grandchildren. She is also known for her extensive charity work.
We love that.
Right. Yeah. Moving on to Judith Olivia Dench, who was born in the Heworth area of York on 9 December 1934. Maggie Smith was 28 of December and Judy was 9 December.
Okay.
So very, very close. She is the daughter of an Irish mother and English father. Her mother, Eleonora Olive, was born in Dublin. Her father, Reginald Arthur Dench, was a doctor from Dorset who grew up primarily in Dublin and who fought on the Western Front in World War I. Her parents met while studying at Wesley College in Dublin. Though she initially trained as a set designer, she became interested in drama school as her brother Jeff attended the Central School of Speech and Drama. She was also inspired by seeing Peggy Ashcroft play Cleopatra on stage, which she later said changed my life. She applied and accepted. She applied and was accepted at the Central School, then based at the Royal Albert Hall, London, where she was a classmate of Vanessa Redgrave. Interesting.
Who's also a dame. Yeah.
Dench made her first professional stage appearance in September 1957 with the Old Vic Company at the Royal Court Theatre in Liverpool as Ophelia in Hamlet.
Damn. Wow.
According to the reviewer for the London Evening Standard, Dench had, quote, talent which will be shown to better advantage when she acquires some technique to go with it. That dude called some
bullshit. That is some English shade.
That is some shade.
Wow.
Dench has garnered Dench has garnered various accolades throughout her career, spanning over 7 decades, including an Academy Award, a Tony Award, 2 Golden Globe Awards, 4 British Academy Television Awards, 6 British Academy Film Awards, and 7 Olivier Awards.
Is her Oscar for Gosford? What's her Oscar for? Do you remember?
It's very disappointing. It's for Shakespeare in Love.
Oh, you're right.
Oh, right, right.
She's in like two scenes. Yeah,
she's in
fucking
it.
Fucking great in it, though.
I forgot about that.
She's
also
great.
I'm thinking of Maggie Smith in Gosford Park. Yeah. Okay, great.
Dench is
great.
A longtime resident of Outwood, Surrey, a Quaker since her school years.
Wow.
She said of her faith in 2013, "I think it informs everything I do. I couldn't be without it." Dench married actor Michael Williams in 1971. They remained together until his death from lung cancer in 2001.
Wow.
Their only child was daughter Finty Williams. She was born in 1972 and became an actress. Through her daughter, Dench has a grandson who was born in 1997. Dench has been in a relationship with David Mills, a conservationist, since 2010.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, she don't know.
Dope.
All right. Now ready for... Helen,
my
Lydia,
mom.
Mironov.
They just
Mironov.
Oh, yes.
Who knew?
She was born 26 July 1945 at Queen Charlotte's and Chelsea Hospital in the Hammersmith District of London to an English mother and Russian father.
Yeah, interesting.
Her mother, Kathleen Kitty Alexandrina Eve Matilda, was a working-class woman for West Ham, the 13th of 14 children, born to a butcher whose own father was the butcher to Queen Victoria.
Holy fuck.
There you go.
Well, shit.
That's great.
Mirin's father, Vasily Petrovich Mironov, was a member of an exiled family of the Russian nobility.
Damn.
He was taken to England when he was two by his father, Pyotr Mironov. In 1951, he changed the family name to Mirin. Mirin considers her upbringing to have been very anti-monarchist.
Sure.
She was the second of three children. She has an older sister, Catherine, and a younger brother, Peter Basil. Mirin attended Hamlet Court Primary School in Westcliff-on-Sea, where she had the lead role in a school production of Hansel and Gretel. And St. Bernard's High
as
School.
As the witch or as Hansel? I mean, as Gretel.
It doesn't say. I assume it's
Gretel. Well, what's the lead role of Hansel and Gretel? That's
well,
fucking
you're right.
Stupid.
You're right.
She was Hansel and Gretel?
She did them both.
She was the
one
ampersand?
Show.
She was
one
that good.
Show.
She was that good. In high school, she also acted in school productions. She subsequently attended a teaching college, the New College of Speech and Drama in London. At the age of 18, she passed the audition for the National Youth Theatre. And at 20, she played Cleopatra in the National Youth Theatre production of Antony and Cleopatra at the Old Vic, a role which she says launched my career. As a result of her work for the National Youth Theatre, Mirren was invited to join the Royal Shakespeare Company. Mirren lived with Northern Irish actor Liam Neeson during the early 1980s after they met while working on Excalibur.
Yep.
When interviewed by James Lipton for Inside the Actors Studio, Neeson said Mirren was instrumental in his getting an agent. Mirren began dating American director
she
Taylor Hackford.
She has a very
Hackford.
Specific set of skills.
Very specific. she married Taylor Hackford in 1986. They were married on 31 December 19. What did it say? Oh, this was. Oh, they began dating in 1986. Married in 1980. Hold on, no, incorrect. I'm wrong. I'm reading this poorly. My eyes are bad.
Okay.
So they started dating in 1986. They got married in 1997 on Hackford's 53rd birthday.
Right.
They met on the set of White Knights. It is her first marriage and his third. He has two children from a previous marriage. She has no children herself and has stated that except for you. Sorry, sorry, Bales. Yeah,
it's okay, but I'm a bastard. It's fine.
She has stated she has no maternal instinct whatsoever.
Yeah.
In 1990, Mirren said in an interview that she was an atheist. In the August 2011 issue of Esquire, she said, "I'm quite spiritual. I believe in fairies when I was a child. I do sort of believe in fairies now and leprechauns, but I don't believe in God." among her major awards, Mirren has won an Academy Award, 4 BAFTA Awards, 3 Golden Globe Awards, 5 Emmy Awards, and 1 Tony Award.
Yeah. What's her Tony?
Not sure. I can't remember.
Gonna find out.
Find out.
Yeah. Thank you, Scott. That fucking
Thanks, Scott.
Rose.
My pleasure. That was there was a lot. I mean, there's a lot written on all three of these women.
Of
like it's extensive. But yeah. And it was interesting because then I'll just go ahead and tell the story. So it popped up.
Oh, the audience, of course.
Mm. Oh, audience. She was in the audience. Oh, yeah,
that was
duh.
Recently. Yeah, that was okay.
But so when doing Excalibur, the director John Borman cast her alongside Nicole Williamson as Merlin. At one time, the two actors were actually lovers, but went through a very bad breakup while starring together in a 1974 production of Macbeth. As a result, Williamson, who was notoriously eccentric and temperamental both on and off stage, was bitter and angry toward Mirren, and he called their work together on the play a disaster. Mirren came away from the experience saying that Williamson was dark, cold, and nasty to her. Our relationship was horrendous. But director John Borman envisioned very real tension and friction, and that's when he cast them together.
Wow.
Opposite each other. And initially, both of them fucking refused. Borman persisted, offered them more money. Both of them finally agreed. But to everyone's amazement, Nicole Williamson and Helen Mirren actually reconciled their differences and became great friends while working on Excalibur.
Yeah,
and
shitty movies bring good actors together.
Whoa!
That movie is ridiculous.
It is ridiculous.
Excalibur.
It's ridiculously awesome.
Yes.
Yes.
It is a time capsule. It's a time capsule.
May I just say, I have
you
to get this
say,
out.
Get it out.
I didn't finish it because I fell asleep, but I did watch the good
so
first
half
of
it. You missed the best moment of the whole movie.
I'm going to get it because now I own it, but it's only $5 on Apple TV, y'all. Non-spawn. The first thing that made me laugh out loud was when Uther comes back, Arthur's father comes back, and he's supposed to take Egraine. And he puts on a guise so that he looks like Arthur, he looks like her, the Duke of Cornwall, her current husband. And he comes in and she thinks it's her husband. And then he grabs her and he rips the top of her dress off. And then it cuts to their sex scene and she is completely fucking naked and he is completely in his entire suit of armor.
Hell yeah.
You got to be
Which
ready
I
for
think,
anything.
I think that just seems rude as fuck and uncomfortable.
No.
That's all.
That's how it was done. Tradition.
Yeah.
It's tradition. I wanted to say this real quick because it leads me into my next piece, which I watched a movie that last night just for fun that I actually didn't know existed until I was looking up these people. But here are real quick before I get to that. Here are a few more sirs and dames that I know for sure exist because of this thing that I watch. But Richard and David Attenborough are both
Sirs. Yeah, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sidney Poitier was a sir. Alfred Hitchcock was a sir. Jerry Lewis was a sir. Alec Guinness was a sir.
Oh yeah, I knew that. Yeah.
Anyway, but those are all kind of fun. De Niro is a sir. They mention it on the thing. Salman Rushdie's a sir. There's like random stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, two that were really big for me Connery, Clint Eastwood, people like that. Two that were really big for me were Eileen Atkins.
Oh, right on.
And,
oh, yeah.
And Joan Plowright.
Of course. Joan Plowright.
Dames.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, I was looking Joan Plowright up, and I was surprised that I hadn't found these other things when looking it up. I think I typed in Joan Plowright and Maggie Smith or something to see like what they had been in together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And this documentary comes up and it has two different names called Tea with the Dames. It's those four dames together, Joan Plowright, Eileen Atkins, Judi Dench, and Maggie Smith. And they apparently do this all the time. Like once, I think it was once a year or a few times a year or something, they just get together to just like gossip and spill the tea and drink tea and hang out. Yeah, and they just like do it at one of their houses, like, and you know, just to sort of like bring each other back down to earth and talk about their fears and talk about acting, whatever. And it's, you just kind of fall into the doc really quickly because it starts out and they ask him a couple questions and it's a little canned and you can feel them being uncomfortable. And finally they just let them like sit and talk.
Cool.
And you're like,
oh, word.
And it's really good. And then it just will randomly like show pictures of whatever they're talking about. Like Judi Dench will be like, well, we met on the set of this thing, you know, and Maggie's like, oh, right, of course. And then it, you know, it cuts to a picture of them together, like in black and white.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So it's just fun. It's cute. I highly recommend everybody go check it out. But it makes you really miss Joan Plowright, like as an actress. And so, like, she's just such a fun energy. And I think was like sort of almost blind by the end of her life. And it, or is she still alive? She's not still alive.
No, right? She passed away a while ago. Passed. Yeah.
But like, she was married to Laurence Olivier, right?
For a long time.
For a long, long time. And they talk about it a bit, and they, you know. So anyway, everyone check that one out. But let's talk a bit about some of our favorite and least favorite performances of these people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we discuss like also kind of like maybe our first interaction with them? Like,
sure. Like, what was your like introduction to these three women? Like, do you remember?
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, for Maggie Smith, for me, it was probably Clash of the Titans. She plays Thetis in it.
Right.
I didn't, because my dad always had that on when I was a kid. But probably the first time when I knew who she was Hook, definitely.
I think that's my first one. Yeah. That's the first one where I clocked her as like an entity of being like, ooh, I love her.
Yeah.
She's in. Yeah.
What about you, Scott?
Maggie Smith may have been Clash of the Titans when Clash of the Titans first came out. Well before
her. It was 81.
Yeah. And around that same time, Excalibur was the first time I'd seen Helen Mirren. And well, I watched
young
that movie
to see Excalibur.
And that's why I brought it up with you when you went to buy it there, because there was a PG version of it that they cut for cable. It was like one of the first times that they'd ever done that, because there've been so many complaints, people sitting down with the family to watch King Arthur, and within
and
the first 10 minutes,
and sex scenes,
And so, so I remember having kind of
titties
seen that
steel
when I shouldn't have, and it's also just very bloody. Like, you know, there's, you know, daggers through the throat,
it's
and
also
stuff
just
like
ridiculously acted and written.
Oh yeah, it's all so over the top.
No, I got the R-rated one with the titties and steel. It was great.
And then Judi Dench, I remembered they showed us in school when I was a kid the Midsummer version, Midsummer Night's version, which I think was a TV production from like the late 60s. And it was her, oh, I might get this totally wrong, Diana Rigg was in it, David Warner was in it, I think John Hurt was in
it. Movie?
It was like a made-for-TV movie.
Oh, wow.
And then they,
the
like, it was distributed.
Hardcore cast for a made-for-TV movie.
It was, but they were like, it was like the late, they had, none of them had broken yet.
I see.
None of them were huge yet.
Yeah.
So I always remember her, and always just sort of, I was always just sort of amazed, intrigued by her face and her eyes specifically, which is ironic because she has pretty, both her and Maggie Smith have pretty severe eye issues now. But like Judi Dench is pretty much retired. She can't, she can't read anymore. Yeah. But I just, those steely blue eyes were just extraordinary. And, her and Ian McKellen, I just, you know, were born with eyes for film, you know, that can, you know, they were so powerful. But yeah, that, those are my earliest memories of them.
Another early Maggie Smith memory I wanted to throw out was Sister Act.
Yes.
He watched movie like on repeat.
100%.
I
remember, I do remember seeing The Prime of Miss Jean Brody.
I watched that for this.
I think my mom had done it in college. And then when came out,
it's a good one.
I remember seeing that when I was early. It's okay. Yeah. I think the play is better. Play is much better.
Well, I think my feeling when I watched that movie was it's a lot of the script, except the one character that I played in the play is cut from the movie.
Oh,
it's the nun version of Sandy. It's the old, it's the adult version of Sandy. And she's only at the beginning and the end. I mean, I never got fucking cast in my conservatory. So, but, I just watching interacting with that story again, it left me feeling kind of weird and gross by the end of it. And I just don't know if it's just kind of like a weird dated story now. That
Crime of Miss Jean Brody?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a time capsule. There's no need to do that or, you know, anymore for sure. As a play? No, I can't. Yeah. I agree with you.
Judy, wait, Beige and I need to chime in on Judy Dench. I probably saw her in Shakespeare in Love first.
No, I definitely had seen her before that.
Like, I saw that movie Dench. In theaters.
Mm.
Honestly, for me, Judy Dench, the first time I really clocked her might have been as M, which is sad. Because that's, like, pretty late. Like, right. Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Goldeneye. I mean, like, that's got to be it. I was watching that. I mean, that came out in 95. I was 5 years old. So it's got to be. And I was, I saw it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So, yeah, that's my first Judy Dench is Goldeneye, which is, you know, that's what
she did. Well, it's funny because I think one of my favorite Judy Dench film performances is Skyfall.
Oh, like, she's absolutely
incredible. She's fantastic in that. And like to see her get into some dirt and some shooting and some blowing some shit up. Like, it's kind of badass. And it's one of the things that makes that movie the best Bond movie in my opinion.
For sure.
It's just they give everybody some depth and some emotionality for the first time in a long time.
Go ahead.
No, go for it, Paige.
My first Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I know for a fact was Calendar Girls.
Oh, Calendar Girls is so good.
And the reason I know that is because it was 2003. I was 13. And my mom rented it and was like, let's watch this together. My mom and I loved watching like this tone of movie. Together,
just
right?
Indie,
like,
British indie vibe,
what I call old lady comedies,
or
old lady dramedies, and I don't mean that in any pejorative way. I just mean that there's tend to be like older women like in the movies,
sure,
that like Steel Magnolias, or like even like a lot of Southern Fare, like Fried Green Tomatoes, and like, you know, that kind of stuff. That's
absolutely
like really big part of my life. Like, these movies were big for us. So my mom brings home Calendar Girls. This movie is about, and I think it's a true story, about a group of women, for people who don't know, a group of women in some small part of, here, I'll tell you.
Yeah.
A women's institute, that's all it says, chapters fundraising effort for a local hospital by posing nude for a calendar, and it becomes a media sensation. And it's in a tiny little town in England, wherever. And it's Julie Walters, Helen Mirren, Penelope Wilton. Like, it's like all these really fun
fantastic
character actresses.
Fantastic.
And then it has like Kieran Hines and like, you know, cool, fun actors in it. And then it's that other really hot older woman, Celia Imrie. Is that her name? I-M-R-I-E.
Yeah.
Something like that. Anyway, look her up. She's hot. But they all pose nude in it. And there's a scene where Helen Mirren is topless in it. And my mom and I were cool. I had seen Titanic when I was 6 years old in theaters. You know what I mean? So, like, we were okay. But I remember that being, like, one of the moments, because I was like 13, where I was like, we can't watch these things together anymore. And we had to like stop. But that's the first time I really clocked her for real. I'm sure I saw her in other things. She's a voice. She's the voice of the queen in Prince of Egypt. So I wouldn't have known her from that, but she's in it.
Another flick that I saw her in pretty early was 2010, the sequel to 2001.
Fuck, that's right. That's her. I forgot about that. I didn't see that till way later, though.
It's another movie with a really fascinating cast of people. You've got Roy Scheider and John Lithgow and her. And
I've never finished Caligula because boring. It's and Excalibur's fine.
Well, I had watched Caligula because of the dirty stuff, and it's right. filthy. Like, it's disgusting.
It's softcore.
It's Caligula.
It's well, I mean, there. It depends on what version you see. There's a hardcore version out there with penetration yeah. and the whole nine. But the
most
first
recently,
scene,
yo, go ahead.
But Helen Mirren in that. There's a lot of Helen Mirren boobies in that. That was like, oh, like 10-year-old, 12-year-old Scott was like, oh.
I didn't get into Helen Mirren for a long time because, and for me, it was her voiceover stuff. Did you know that she did a voice on one episode of Frasier? She was a caller.
Yes. Yeah, I saw that.
And, Prince of Egypt. But I didn't know who she was. I knew who she was when, like, 10 years ago, she was all over magazines and stuff, and they were just talking about, she's so fucking hot, and she's in her 60s. So I think I resented the fact that this woman that's old enough to be my mother was so much hotter than me. But because of my jealousy and short-sightedness, I watched a lot. Like, I watched a fair amount of movies just so I could catch up on her material. Because I'd already seen quite a bit of Maggie Smith and Judi Dench. And I threw some new ones in there, too. But, like it's not that I thought she was a no-talent asshole. I was just jealous. So I didn't watch a bunch of her stuff.
Something I really love about Helen Mirren that I don't think is necessarily true about Judi Dench and is mildly true about Maggie Smith, but not fully, but is 100% true about Helen Mirren. She is willing to not look good on screen.
Yeah. Oh, yeah,
and that's what I found myself impressed about by some of the movies I watched.
A stunner, obviously.
Yeah,
they all are.
Yeah,
but she still is to this day. She's in that. Okay. I want to talk about a couple recent Helen Mirren performances to talk about this. So she's on 1923 with Harrison Ford. She's a babe on it.
Mm-hmm.
She was in the new Shazam, Fury of the Gods. And no, it's not good, but she's like kind
of
putting in work.
Of course she's great in it. Yeah.
And you're like, okay, good for you.
She's naturally great.
She and Rachel Zegler, weirdly, are like kind of good in it. And then she's in the Fast and the Furious saga.
Right.
Yeah.
Looking like really hot, right? So all these things, she's like these like sexy queen, like older women type characters, right? Then she does Golda last year, which is like a lot of makeup. I mean, a lot of prosthetic makeup to be like a totally different person and is willing to like go there and is willing to do, you know, like indie horror and willing to do like all this cool stuff. Anyway, I think it's really fun that she's still working so much. She's also the narrator of Barbie.
Yes.
Yeah, and she's great.
She's in the Fast saga, as I just said. Anyway.
You had mentioned 1823, so I wanted to do a shout out to
1923.
Sorry, 1923 to Mosquito Coast,
right.
which she and Harrison Ford starred in. That's where Harrison Ford met a young River Phoenix who would go on to play young Indiana Jones because of that. But it's a remarkable film. It's a Peter Weir film who just announced this week that he's retiring. He won't be making any more movies, which is a real shame because he was a dude that was making interesting films his entire career. But if you've never seen Mosquito Coast, it's about a man who moves his family from modern day America to literally the middle of nowhere, Central America, to get away from society. And it's a really, really cool flick. And I think Harrison Ford might have gotten a nom for that. He definitely did for the Amish one. What was the Amish
Witness.
One? Witness, yeah.
I watched Witness also, like 3 nights ago, Scott.
Also Peter Weir flick.
Good movie.
Really good flick. Really good.
Good movie. Blank Check with Griffin and David might be covering Peter Weir soon.
Hmm.
Yeah, they've
and
got
I was
to.
Like, dope.
But he had a great career where he did movies about intersections of different cultures and civilizations and
yeah, we stand
stuff
a
like
legend.
That.
God,
yeah,
damn.
Dude.
Okay,
yeah.
This I want to play a little game.
Okay,
I'd like to play a game. Would you like to play a game?
All right.
This is let's guess each other's favorite and least favorite performances of each of these, and it gives us a chance to talk about their careers a little bit without having to like step through their IMDb's and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right?
Oh God!
And then I have an internal countdown at some point.
Okay.
We love that. Okay, so who wants to go first? I'll go first.
Okay, you go, go first. Ahead. Go ahead. No, go, please.
Okay, so let's do Helen Mirren first. Okay. What do you think is my favorite Helen Mirren performance of all time?
Ah.
I'll give you a hint.
Yeah.
It is mildly recent. It is in the last... it's in the last decade. It was in the last 15 years. Let's say that.
Okay.
Hmm.
I think Scott's gonna be better at guessing this than me.
I might actually change my mind on this one because there's two that are really great, but this one's fine. For now.
Oh gosh, Bales.
It is
Fast and Furious.
No, but I fucking love her in that shit. It is a, it's a movie that did not do well at all. It came out in 2014. It is, I'm changing my mind. It was 100 Foot Journey. You were never going to guess it. I love that movie so much. And it's, I think she's fantastic in it, and it's kind of a mediocre movie, and it's nobody ever saw it. My favorite movie of hers is a 2006 film that she was given an Oscar nomination for.
The Queen.
Correct.
Yeah. That was a new one that I watched just
for this.
Didn't
she win? She
won.
Yes,
but I didn't want to give it away, so I was trying to...
Yeah.
Yeah. I watched that just for this, and I didn't realize it was like the precursor to The Crown and all that shit, so...
It's sort of what got the money. The Crown is... The pitch for The Crown is, what if the Queen kept going?
Yeah.
And they're like, yeah, all right.
Now they just need to do Queen Victoria or something like that.
Yeah.
Or they need to just keep doing royals from the past. I'm in.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so should we just keep going with the Helen Mirren thing?
Yeah. What's my least favorite Helen Mirren?
Your least Excalibur.
No. No, that's not true.
Least favorite.
So my least favorite Helen Mirren performance. Let me find the year.
Oh, I.
What?
I got
ahead. Was in 2011. It is a remake of an old British comedy.
It's Arthur.
It is Arthur.
Which is
a
also...
fucking terrible movie with all performances that are half-assed. And
oh, my God. And it should have worked with her on paper. I thought that the casting was brilliant. But, yeah, it also...
So bad.
It's just an impossible remake because it's so... That movie is so problematic. The original is so problematic. Yeah. I love it, but it's problematic.
And then they cleanse it, but then it's also, what's his name? We invoked him earlier and I hate him. Russell Brand. It's also him. And you're just like, I guess that's the one. Like, that's the same. That's the one-to-one, right? That's the, like, or what am I thinking of? What's the guy's name from the original art?
Dudley Moore.
Dudley. That's the modern-day Dudley Moore, right? So I'm sort of like, okay.
Yeah.
Like, sure, and it just doesn't, and it's like, Luis Guzman's really bad in that movie, too. I just remember it being really hard.
It's a fucking,
And then they made a sequel.
All right.
Burn it all down. Okay. She's also bad in Collateral Beauty, but that's we'll talk about that later. Okay, you guys want to do your Helen Mirren or should I do my others? Let's do Helen Mirren. Stay with Helen Mirren.
Yeah.
Stay in Mirren zone. Stay with mom.
Okay, I think CJ's is the Queen.
No.
Is her favorite.
No.
Oh.
That was the most incredulous look.
I'm proud of all of the viewing I did for this.
Have you ever seen, here's a question for you, CJ. Have you ever seen the Julie Taymor Tempest?
Mm-hmm.
Is that it?
As my favorite?
Yeah. I don't know. I was just asking. I think she's good in that. I don't know. It's a question. You might have had, maybe.
No,
I don't know.
No. Do you want... The Tempest is actually. Oh, no. No.
Okay, great.
My favorite.
Is that your least favorite?
It is my least favorite.
The Tempest is your least favorite?
My clue for that was going to be, it's not her fault.
It's not her fault. That's the problem. That's why I can't say it's my least favorite, because it isn't her fault. You're right. But
do you want a tip for my favorite?
Give me a tip.
It was.
Just the tip.
It was another beginning or precursor to something else.
Winchester. No, it's
And it's been in the 2000s. So it was like
really?
Last 24 years, yeah.
A precursor to something else, meaning like something else was made out of it?
Yeah, kinda. Yeah.
Mm.
That she actually then, the precursor she wasn't a part of.
Oh, you mean she's in the thing that I understand.
I can give you another hint that'll give
it's
it
It's obviously
away.
National Treasure Book of Secrets, but I'm just trying to make sure I look at all of it.
Gosford Park?
Gosford Park is we Julian Fellowes, which led to Downton Abbey. And right. Gosford Park feels so hard like Downton Abbey.
Maggie Smith is also in
Gosford
Park.
Gosford Park was Robert Altman.
But Julian Fellowes was part of that too, correct?
He wrote the script.
I know, and it's all improv
Altman,
and blah blah blah.
Altman,
I know.
Julian Fellowes and Bob Balaban wrote that script together.
Nobody writes a Robert Altman script.
I've had that explained to me.
You're right, Scott.
But I dug that because y'all were talking about how she's not scared to play. Not pretty, and I was like, oh, Helen Mirren's in Gosford Park. I'm sure she's going to be one of these like rich people rolling in here, and she wasn't.
No,
she's great.
She's so great in it.
She's great in it.
Gosford Park rules. That's the only thing I think Maggie Smith and Helen are in together. Is Judy in that? Are they all three in that?
No, just the two of them.
There's no Judy.
But Eileen Atkins is in it. It's like a murderer's
Eileen
row.
Atkins
Stephen
is
Fry
That's
is in it.
Of. It's Atkins.
Michael Gambon is in it. Like, it's
a
murderer's
row.
Yeah.
I love it. Yeah. Okay, Scott.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
I think your least favorite is Raising Helen, which you watch on loop.
Yeah.
But you just, every time she comes on screen, you get angry.
We have not mentioned my least favorite yet.
Is it The Pledge?
No.
Okay. Do you like The Pledge? Here's a legitimate test for you as a character study. Do you like the Jack Nicholson 2001 movie, The Pledge?
No.
Okay, I don't either. No, it's fine.
That's all right.
Sean Penn directed it. It's fine.
Yeah. Give us a clue.
Give us a clue.
This is for your least favorite, yeah?
Yes.
Least favorite first.
This was an HBO movie.
Okay.
About somebody who
Phil Spector.
Should not be celebrated or
it's the Spector
humanized
movie.
In any way, shape, or form.
Yeah. It's the Linda Kinney Baden performance.
What?
Is it Phil Spector or is it Hitchcock? Because I feel the same about both of them.
It's not the Phil Spector performance? Oh, wow. Okay.
No.
Oh, I don't know then.
It is but The Passion of Ayn Rand.
I saw that and I was like, I'm kind of curious.
Yeah.
I just went past it thinking there's no way anyone watched that.
Oh, man, I was curious.
I think she was nominated for like Golden Globes and Emmys and shit. She might have won one of her Emmys for that. But I think that's such a it's like trying to make a movie about Hitler or a child molester. I don't think she is.
Yeah.
Ayn Rand is any better than Hitler or a child molester.
Yeah, wow. Ayn Rand's
a horrible
sucks.
Person that is basically.
I
like,
think it's like a pretty.
My brother
it's like
reads
an,
Ayn
it's
Rand.
Pretty erotic. I think it's about her being like. Let's
well, yeah,
talk
she, oh, yeah.
Right. He was
oh,
very
yeah.
poly and like.
Yeah,
enjoyed
it was,
affairs with many people.
You know,
and
she's also go ahead.
Well, she was a fraud. She was a woman that died. You know. On Medicare and Social Security because she lost everything she had, but you know the anti-government.
Yeah,
oh, she was a fucking. Oh,
okay.
Nothing makes
but,
me.
But right. Helen Mirren, who rules, is in the franchise called Red. You guys ever
yeah.
seen Red? Red.
I like Red and Red too.
Kind of good.
I do. I like
kind of good.
Both.
Mary Sue. Mary Louise Parker. Sorry.
Yeah.
Isn't it? and then you have she's the narrator. Of Enemy of the Reich, the Noor Anayat Khan story, which is
I saw that, and that was nominated, a script
that was nominated for us a couple years ago. And then she's in Monsters University as Dean Scrabble. Y'all remember that? She's pretty good in that.
I just wanted to throw out, too, I watched the first episode of the Catherine the Great that she did in 2019.
I liked it.
The production design is fucking impeccable, but I got to the end of that first episode and I was like, I need to know way more about what's actually going on right now.
Yeah, it's dense before I can enjoy the show. Very, very dense. But yeah. I like
she looks
I like
amazing.
The series. I like the series.
Okay.
May I do my internal ranking real quick?
Do your internal ranking.
I wanted to rank my Elizabeth II performances.
Got it.
Okay. Got you. Okay.
Four is Imelda Staunton.
Okay.
Three is Helen Mirren. Two is Claire Foy. And one is the best actress in the fucking world, Olivia
Mary
Colman.
Mary Louise Parker. Oh, sorry. Who?
How dare you. Say? Who did you say? You. Olivia Colman.
Oh, yeah. Olivia Colman. Yeah. Yeah. She's good.
Yeah. So.
Have you ever seen The Favorite?
Yes. I own it. I watched it because you yelled at me to watch it, and now I own it, and I've seen it a ton.
Checking.
I love it.
Please, Catherine in that one? One of the
I
French
can't remember.
Ones.
Isn't it Anne?
Anne. It's Anne.
It's Anne of Scots.
Catherine. Yeah, it's Anne of Scots. Okay. Who do we want to do next?
Let's do Maggie Smith.
All right.
Mags Magoo.
Oof. Mags Magoo. It's hard.
Mine came up immediately. I knew exactly what it was going to do.
Your
for my
favorite
best worst.
Performance is Downton Abbey.
Yes.
Oh, okay, Downton Abbey. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Downton Abbey.
She's incredible.
She's great in it. I mean, and she made the entire world fucking love her in that. I mean, everyone loved her for Harry Potter, but my parents didn't interact with Harry Potter. That sure, show sure. made her a household name in Illinois for my parents. So, okay. Worst.
Your least favorite of hers is not Hook because it's a good performance.
No, it is
probably, and it's not Clash of the Titans because you like that movie.
I love that movie.
It's
the new one sucks.
Probably something newer.
Mm-hmm. It
and
is.
Is it within a franchise?
Yes.
Is it a specific Harry Potter movie?
No.
It's not. Okay.
No.
Okay. I'm just making sure.
Oh, were you going to say Chamber of Secrets?
Yeah, that was my first thought. Is it Best Exotic Marigold Hotel?
No, and I was almost going to watch that, but then I had a ton of people be like, no, it's a grandparent film, so I
no,
didn't.
No, they're cute.
Okay. Oh.
And the second
I
Best Exotic
it.
Marigold is cute, too.
They're both I just
we're
didn't
guessing
get to
your
it.
Least favorite?
My least favorite.
Sister Act 2?
No, I love Sister Act 2.
Wait, okay, so it's in a franchise.
Yeah.
And it's not a Harry Potter movie.
Nope.
Okay.
I have no idea.
And it's not in the so I literally have no clue. Unless it's
it
Death
is,
of Nile.
My least favorite is Downton Abbey, A New Era, the movie that came out.
Okay.
Because
Because
they did not need that movie. And they certainly did not need her in it.
Yeah.
So that's my...
They had to sell it somehow to
they
people
didn't...
who don't care.
Just putting a hat on a hat. They didn't need it. The movie was not
there's
good. And there's been another one, which
yeah. And another one's coming.
I won't see it.
They're
going to
keep going forever until they
no,
make
No, I won't.
Show
I mean,
again.
My parents will go see it and giggle in the theater together. But like after the first movie, I was like, I don't need any more of these. I didn't even need this one. So
Scott,
hot take.
Your least favorite performance is Hook.
Yes.
For sure.
Your most
for sure.
Your most
she,
favorite.
She's. I. It's an embarrassment.
Your most favorite is A Room with a View.
No, but that's up there.
Okay, it's up there for me. But
no,
yeah, okay.
And it's one
First
that we've...
Wives Club.
She good. Is, yeah, she good in that
great.
Movie.
I love okay, that movie.
Yeah.
This is one we haven't talked about yet.
Okay.
But
okay.
It is one of her Oscar wins.
Wait.
And...
So not Gosford.
Mm-mm. Oh.
I'm looking at my phone.
The wheels are spinning. The IMD
one
is...
One of her Oscar wins?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Early or late? Because she only has three, right?
She has two wins.
Oh, I thought she had three. What are her two wins? Lady in the Van? What is she?
No, well, California Suite is my favorite Maggie Smith performance.
Oh.
Oh, I've never seen it.
Girl, you need to go. Okay, I'm putting it on my list. It is a brilliantly meta flick for Neil Simon, but it's about actors assembling, getting ready to go to the Academy Awards. And it's her and David Niven. And if you ever want to see a husband and wife, they weren't husband and wife, but husband and wife characters play against each other in brutal fashion and hilarious fashion. Like, she is so fast and her takes are so good. And David Niven is right with her. California Suite. Watch it. All I'm right. telling you. Wow.
So you said it's Neil Simon. Is it supposed to be a playoff of Plaza Suite, or is it a completely different?
No, it's a completely different thing. Okay, it was just okay. a screenplay that name. He wrote. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. But it's my, it's fucking great.
Yeah. What about you, Bailey?
Yeah.
My.
Your least favorite's Hook.
Least favorite. Let's start with here. I accidentally X'd out of it, so I'm just pulling it back up so I have the dates and stuff so I can. Okay. My least favorite is something that I'm changing my mind.
Okay.
I think that performance is kind of interesting. fuck, this is hard.
It's hard. It's really hard with her.
I think my least favorite is from a movie from the 70s that I've only seen on TV sort of in passing, but I remember not enjoying it at all, even though it's got this kind of fun stacked cast.
Murder by Death?
Yeah.
I love Murder by Death, but I totally get it. I totally get it.
I just really loved Peter Sellers as a kid, so I would watch anything he was in or had anything to do with. And it's too Neil Simon for a kid.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good for me. And so that's what I'll say just because that's my memory of it.
Yeah, no, fair enough.
Peter Falk for me as a kid was, I loved though, so that's tough. But
David Niven also in that, Peter Falk in that, Truman Capote, Alec Guinness is the blind butler, changed my life a little bit because I'd only known him as Obi-Wan at that point when I saw him. So what's your favorite, Bales?
My favorite is one that's a bit interesting, and it actually falls into the category of old lady movies that I would watch with my mother.
First Wives Club.
No, although she's fucking great in that.
Is it the second best Exotic Marigold Hotel?
It's not, although both of those movies are fantastic.
They're
and
fun,
I highly
yeah.
recommend them. Yeah, they're really watchable.
Ladies in Lavender.
No.
It just sounds like an old lady.
Similar,
movie.
Close, but it's not that.
You got a time frame? Can you give me a time frame?
It is from the early 2000s, maybe late 90s, and it is she is doing a hardcore accent.
Is it Divine?
Divine Secrets of the Yaya Sisterhood. I just rewatched this movie. This movie kind of stinks in the most fun way ever. My mom and I watched it when I was in Alabama. We had seen it together when I was like 12. It came out in 2002. We saw it together, and she just kept laughing and hitting me and saying, "That is my mother. That is my mother." Talking about Ellen Burstyn. Ellen Burstyn in it. And I was like, okay, great. And she was like, I'm Sandra Bullock and Ellen is my mom. I was like, okay. And so we rewatched it when I was in Alabama and we were just cackling and it's so much fun. And
right
it's
on.
Just such a good performance. Anyway, let's do Judi Dench. I got to get out of here, actually. Okay, so I got to get to the bed. Judi Dench.
I'll start with my favorite. If you want to take a guess at it.
You want to give us some clues?
It's a big one. It's a big one.
I got it. It's the 2022 Will Ferrell Christmas Carol retelling, Spirited.
No, but I don't hate that movie. Maybe I should.
I'm going to watch that next year. I didn't watch it this last year.
It was. You said it was kind of big. It was a big one.
Yeah.
It's not Skyfall.
No, no. Okay. I like Skyfall.
Is it Iris?
Iris is my second. It's actually Philomena.
Oh, okay, okay,
yeah,
okay.
Sure.
That movie, and I think it's just the combination of the two of them and her. She's so subtle. She's just in it. Mm-hmm. And it's just, there's nothing over the top in it. The revelations that she has while in it are beautiful. And she's playing somebody. It's always interesting to see somebody who's playing somebody, quote unquote, and this is a horrible way to describe it, somebody lower than them, somebody more common than them. And she's just playing an ordinary woman. And I just think it's
Philomena rules.
Yeah. The door.
Iris also rules.
My least favorite. Ugh.
Your least favorite is Die Another Day.
It might be one of those Brosnan Bonds. I thought she was wasted. Yeah. I think that was the revelation.
She was wasted in those movies.
I mean, she was wasted.
I've just seen a drunk.
You watch it and you're like, oh, you cast Judi Dench in this, and you've done nothing. Like in the first movie, she has the great monologue.
Right. Well, yeah.
Your dinosaur
monologue.
And then
after that, she just becomes like
the woman
crew.
Behind
and
the
then,
desk. Yeah.
Yeah. With Craig, they're like, why not just keep her? And they do, and she's great.
Yeah, so I don't have anything that stands out that I particularly hate. I love
she and Maggie Smith did Tea with Mussolini together, which is a cute film.
Oh yeah.
You're not a huge fan of Shakespeare in Love, right?
I do like Shakespeare in Love. I just again, I think
the
that
Paul
she,
that's over that movie yeah, now, too.
Well,
like,
that
feels a little yucky.
I also think she might be a little embarrassed that she showed up for 2 days of work, jerked off. And I mean that in a great way. Like, she's just going full Judi Dench, like, full powers and everything. And then that's what she gets the Oscar for, but not for Iris and not for,
what?
You know.
She did get it for Iris, though, didn't she?
No, she only has one. She only has
the
one.
Nomination.
Okay.
Yeah, she got nominated, but.
Okay.
So
that, but I don't hate. No, there's a lot about Shakespeare in Love I quite like.
Mm-hmm.
What do you, CJ? What
yes.
about you?
My best is, should I just tell you so we can keep moving?
Oh, yeah.
My best is Iris. I watched that for this series, and I was crying the whole fucking time, but it was so, all four of those people, Hugh Bonneville, the guy that we do this podcast about, Ziegler, Jim Broadbent, Kate Winslet, like all four of them. I felt bad that Hugh Bonneville didn't get any kind of nod for that, because I thought he was great.
He was great in it.
I have two, I just put up three fingers. I have two for my least favorite. One of them is obvious, and the other one, she's just completely wasted in it, and I don't think
one is wrong, because you're gonna say Cats.
Yes, Cats.
Wrong. She's amazing.
Not her fault. Not her fault.
No,
terrible fucking
amazing.
Movie.
No,
and then the other one,
you can't judge performance by bad movie though, because she and Ian McKellen are both very good in that movie.
I hate that movie though.
It sucks. Chode, but it rules.
And then,
those two performances rule.
My other least favorite is a Shakespeare movie. I'd be interested to know if y'all could guess which one I'm talking about.
Can you give us a time frame?
Was it? It's not very recent.
It's not recent. It's it was in the 90s.
Okay.
Oh, you didn't fuck with her Kenneth Branagh Hamlet performance.
Yeah, because she doesn't even say anything.
Well.
I mean, she plays Hecuba quite well, but she just... You don't even hear her in it. You just see her. It's just wasted Judi Dench. What about you, Bailey?
Fair enough.
Wasted Judi Dench.
Wasted Judi Dench.
My favorite is a movie that is based on a play that we have covered on this podcast.
Oh.
And it's a comedy. And
Light
she's
Spirit?
Fucking hilarious on it.
Oh, I do want to see that, though.
It's cute. I like the Angela Lansbury one better, but yeah, it's cute.
I don't.
You got a time frame?
It was in the 90s, maybe early 2000s. It stars a couple of our favorite actresses who are still kind of in the game right now. It's got I think Firth is in it. It's got Reese. It's got Rupert Everett, Reese Witherspoon, Frances O'Connor.
Oh,
Tom Wilkinson.
Importance of Being Earnest.
Hey,
oh yeah,
Lady Bracknell.
That was delightful. I was so glad that we watched that.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with it. And then my least favorite is probably I don't know. She has a few kind of annoying voiceover performances that you can tell she's just like really phoning in, and that's probably what I would say.
I also just wanted to mention I rewatched Chocolat for this because I used to love it when I was younger.
That movie sucks.
Rewatch wasn't so bad. I mean, the casting could be a little bit better for some people, but
rewatch it, Scott. I don't know.
I just rewatched it. It wasn't so bad. I thought I was going to hate it, and I didn't.
I do real quick want to
give
just a special shout out to another Judy movie that's forgotten, and that's Mrs. Brown, where she plays Queen Victoria, and with Billy Connolly. It's about a very specific time in Queen Victoria's life, and she and Billy Connolly together are magnificent.
I love Billy Connolly so much.
Magnificence. But
I just rewatched Muppet Treasure Island and Billy Connolly.
I love him so much. I love him.
He's really good.
Oh, goodness.
Okay. Is there anything else we want to say about this crew of dames? There's
no,
nothing like them.
I love them.
They are the grand masters, and I can't wait to go watch that documentary about them drinking tea. Because like you could put these three women in a room together and have them pick their nose. I want to put the three of them with a box of crayons and a big piece of paper and just tell them they have 2 hours.
Legos and beer.
Done.
That's a great one. Absolutely.
Yeah, that sounds fantastic. I mean,
I would love absolutely.
Do we want to do that listener question?
Yeah, let's talk about it real quick. So it wasn't even a listener question. It was that I had posted. I'm very vocal about my opinions on football, mostly for the fact that I have a lot of opinions about the fact, that I wish the Chiefs would change their name, and I post a lot about that a lot.
Sure.
And people always have comments back and forth about it with me, and I'm like, great, yeah, whatever. I also have a lot of opinions about the fact that I think football is theater, and football is its own art form, and football is a form of entertainment, and all these other things. I've also seen the other side of it, where football is sort of a modern day form of, the draft is sort of a modern, slave trade type, auctioning type thing, and all this other stuff. Yep. So I see it all. I see the problems with the NFL. I see the problems with how Kaepernick was handled. I see it all. I'm with it.
College football.
College football right now, all of it. Okay. I see it. Okay. I played football from fourth grade through high school. My knees are still bad. My joints are still bad. Physically I have a lot of problems, but also just it messed with me a lot mentally in terms of my weight was constantly fluctuating. They were putting me on creatine. Sure. They were taking me off creatine. They were adding this. They were taking away that. You're adding a 0 hour for you to work out more because you lost 3 seconds on your 40, whatever meter, and you're like, oh, Jesus. Like, it just was. I went to one of those schools, that you see on three a days or two a days or whatever those shows are. That's the kind of school I went to, and we'd go to state and we'd do the whole thing, and those memories were kind of fun, but for the most part it was awful. And now I have a nephew who got 2 concussions last year playing football.
Oh no.
He's a freshman. That shouldn't have. What are you talking about? He's that's insane. So I'm just on this side of it now where I'm like, watch football. I don't give a fuck. Everybody can watch football. My children will never play it. And I will, but I see its value and I see what it is. But I'd love to hear sort of y'all's thoughts on I know I just said a lot. I'm sorry. But that was kind of like what I had been posting about. And he was just like, wait, I love theater and football. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that. And I was like, fuck, I'm not trying to say that these are mutually exclusive.
Yeah.
So like, go for it.
No, I, first of all, I agree with almost everything you said, and same, like there, my left knee will never be the same. It is, I've been in pain since I was, you know, 15 years old when it happened.
Yeah.
And, I have been struggling a lot with being a fan of a sport, again, for all the similar reasons. It's a billionaire's game, and the players and the coaches and everybody around it are just the little pawns in a billionaire's game. So I have a problem with that. I have a problem with a lot of the conservatism that goes with it. I have a lot of problem with a lot of the religiosity that seems to accompany football, the invoking of God and prayers. And I'm like, that being said, it is very much theater. Maybe it's more theater than other sports. Certainly more than baseball, more than basketball. Soccer probably competes with it just because the fandom and it's so international and all that. I think that's
football has more of a, like, I don't know if
you're right. Yes.
If I'm getting really literal too, like you have a coach, your director telling you the plays to do.
Yes. And there's two other elements I'll touch base and then I'll hand it over to Siege. One is that football was the first sport created and built and adapted to television. Right. To performance in a way that others hadn't. It catered to the camera as opposed to other sports, especially like baseball, that had to learn how to cater to the game.
Right.
Then secondly, because of the complexity of the rules, and if you've ever sat down, especially with a foreigner, and tried to explain football top to bottom,
American football takes hours.
It's so complicated that it has created a subjectivity to it. My joke for the past few years is nobody knows really what a catch is. And you can see a catch sometimes that's ruled a catch and it's on the field and it's like, that's a catch. And then another game that same day, the exact same type of play happens and it's like, nope, that's incomplete. And so because of that subjectivity and because of the complexity of it, it creates layers of drama beyond simply winning and losing. And so, it's absolutely theater. I absolutely agree that it is. I struggle and I have a very complicated relationship with it.
Yeah.
Siege?
For me, it is very theater in that, okay, I am one of those people. To this day, I have had my friends sit down and try to teach me the game of football and my eyes cross and I don't know. I can tell when a game is going well, like I get the gist. Right.
I played it for 9 years and I don't get it. I swear.
I love football in that I love, and this is what theater is to me too, I love communing at someone's house and having food together and cheering for your team and booing for the other team. And I was with a guy years ago that I sat down and watched a season with him, and he did the like pre-show and halftime and after game dudes on YouTube that would talk about it afterwards. And like, to me, that was the height of theater. The thing that I hate the most about football is I have watched so many of my friends just be fucking terrible to each other about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like just mean. And
the culture is rough. The fandoms are bad.
Watching these, the pregame and the halftime, like the way the words he would use to call people, they were slurs half of the time. Mm-hmm, like,
right.
And just this whole thing of like, I don't know. It's also me being a woman and being like, if one more guy tells me I'm emotional, you know what I mean? And I've never seen a more emotional bunch of aggro alpha dudes ever.
Exactly.
But I love it. And people are allowed to like what they like. Just don't be shitty to other people is my rule. So
I agree. Yeah. I love y'all. I love the dames. I think we should spotlight some LA theater and get out of here.
Yeah. Great. Let's do it.
All right, let's go for it.
LA Spotlight.
I got two quickies. 54th annual LADCCs, Los Angeles Drama Critics Circle. It's the first of them that is going to be online streaming. It's completely free, and they want everyone to get involved, not just California folk. Monday, April 8th at 8 o'clock Pacific time. You can find it on, it's going to be live on Instagram and Facebook at LA Drama Critics. Mm-hmm. There's that. And then A Froggy Becomes by Becky Wahlstrom. It's an Open Fist Theater Company. I assistant directed, did a little bit of choreography for it. It's at the Atwater Village Theater. I saw it this last weekend and it's great. It's grown. It's a fun show and it's 70 minutes long. Openfist.org playing through Saturday the 13th.
I forgot to mention earlier at the beginning of the show, I got to see it last week as well. And it is charming as shit. And it's a fast show. Really great performances, really great direction. Shout out to CJ Merriman, who didn't mention that she was the assistant director on it. But she was great. I want to hype The One, a new one-person show by Joe Hernandez-Kolsky, opening at Sacred Fools. It's our first full main stage production in a while. It is a delightful, hilarious, and really moving and touching play about a dude who dips his toe into polyamory and go from there. But check out sacredfools.org. It opens April 12th and will run through May 11th. And we'd love to see you out there. It's at the Black Box and it's going to be cool.
I'll be there opening night.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have anything.
Yeah. You just directed many children doing Shakespeare.
You're taking a well-deserved rest.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Awesome.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's get out of here then. What are we doing next week? Do you guys remember?
Did we pick anything specific?
We did. We have a whole list. I just don't
know. You have the list because you wrote it down because we were drunk while we were doing it.
But I wrote it on a piece of paper somewhere.
Yes, you did.
Oh, no. That was a bad look. Arnard.
Well, stay tuned for the next episode, folks. See what might happen.
We can put a little pre-announcement.
We'll probably cover a movie that's a musical or something.
Yeah.
We had some good ideas.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm doing a lot of packing and stuff right
now. Yeah, you're busy.
We'll talk about that some other time on the pod. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. We'll see you guys later.
Do you all have questions?
I'm Jay Bailey Burcham.
This is CJ. I'm going to remind you, if you need to tell us anything, like how wonderful we are, you can reach out to us via email, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. Scott?
Thanks, CJ. A big shout out to Ryan Thomas Johnson, who I've been spending a lot of time with recently, and it's so great because he's just a marvelous human being. He writes our theme song, and here's a cool thing. Our theme song is better than your fucking theme song. Yo, deal with it. He also writes all of our stingers, and like I said, an amazing human being. And finally, to the great Harold Pinter, who writes every single one.
Gina Ionesco.
Oh, fuck, I fucked it up. Okay, no, back it up. I'll cut it.
He would do that, though. No, he would do that. He would make it somebody else.
I'm trying to turn into a rhinoceros back
to the award-winning playwright, Eugene Ionesco, who writes every single one of our episodes and doesn't even know it. And one day, in the afterlife, we will buy you.
Taking over Mexico.
Listen,
you're terrible.
I'm gonna get it. By the end, I'm gonna get it. I forgot you called me on the spot. We'll get it.
Okay. See you next time. Thanks for joining us. Tumble out of bed and stumble to the kitchen. Pour myself a cup of ambition and yawn and stretch and come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the street, the traffic starts jumping for folks like me. And the job from 9 to 5. Working now.
Time to
Okay, so for this whole season, I have to do things that are also movies from movies.
Yes.
Okay.
Good.
Musicals and movies. It's going to be a challenge. We're going to make it happen. Okay.
Bye.
Later, everyone.
The theater.
Theater.